Hello and welcome to the Freaking Awesome Podcast. It is Sunday, November 19th, 2017. I'm Benjamin Abaya, and joining me today is my super friendly twin brother, John Abaya.
Well, I believe in freaking, but I'm also a big fan of awesome.
Oh, okay. I see what you're doing. I was wondering what you're trying to say. Anyway, and our guest, he's the executive editor, and you can find his work on audienceseverywhere.net. Please welcome back Richard Newby.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for welcome having back. Us. I think the last time we discussed is Logan.
Yep.
Is Logan one of your top films of or top comic book films this year? So
it is. It's my second favorite comic book film of the year, and I think I have it at number 6 overall in the year so
That's
far.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is my also. I think it's probably my number 1. I think second is like Spider-Man probably. And then overall, like film-wise, it's probably like within my top 10 somewhere. I haven't figured that out. How about you, John?
Logan? Yeah. It's in my top 10 of this year. I really enjoyed it.
Did you enjoy it more than Spider-Man Homecoming?
No. I'm a huge Spider-Man fan.
But yeah, thank you again, Richard, for joining us.
Sure.
If you're new to the podcast, we usually discuss and give our impression of what we watched, listened, played, or read throughout the week. And we conclude the episode with a main discussion. This week's main discussion is the film Justice League. So looking forward to that. I think we've all been anticipating this film for the past couple years now. So we'll see how we all thought about that. But before all of that, we have a trailer talk. This week's trailer talk is actually a teaser. It is the film Deadpool 2.
Would you look at that? It seems like we have ourselves a finished painting. So from our family to yours, keep your pants dry, your dreams wet, and remember, hugs, not drugs.
So that is a snippet of the teaser trailer of Deadpool 2. So I don't know what snippet are we going to use in that teaser trailer. So they have an interesting synopsis. I guess it was provided by 20th Century Fox. This is on their IMDb too. So bear with me. This is a long synopsis. After surviving a near-fatal bovine attack, a disfigured cafeteria chef, Wade Wilson, struggles to fulfill his dream of becoming Mayberry's hottest bartender while also learning to cope with his lost sense of taste, searching to regain his spice for life as well as the flux capacitor. Wade must battle ninjas, the Yakuza, and a pack of sexual aggressive canines as he journeys around the world to discover the importance of family, friendships, and flavor, finding a new taste for adventure, earning the Covenant coffee mug title of best lover, world's best lover. That was a mouthful. I don't know if that was some sort of promo device, a way of them to promote the film. Once again, this is directed by David Leitch. Starring Ryan Reynolds, Marina Baccarin, am I saying that correctly? TJ Miller, Josh Brolin, and Brianna Hildenbrand. So, were you a fan, Richard, of the last film? And if you were, what's your thoughts about this teaser trailer?
Yeah, I liked the last film a lot. I thought it was a lot of fun. It was a really good interpretation of the character. And I feel like it's kind of the role that Ryan Reynolds was meant to do. But yeah, I like the teaser trailer. I think that Fox has some really clever marketing for Deadpool, which I think is one of the reasons why the first movie was so successful. Because I think regardless of what they show, I mean, some people complain about the lack of actual film footage. But I feel like regardless of what they show, as long as it includes Deadpool doing something funny, audiences are gonna show up. And the Bob Ross thing was pretty funny and kind of playing on the modern nostalgia factor that he has now.
Yeah, I also agree with that. How about you, John?
Yeah, I really liked the trailer. It felt really different from, like, you know, other things that other movies do. But this is Deadpool. He breaks the fourth wall. I really enjoyed his, you know, poking fun of Bob Ross and the mannerisms that Bob Ross does and taking it out of context, out of painting. and, you know, make it more, I guess, sexualized. And also enjoyed the little, like, quick montage it did in the ending just to show, like, each character and where they're at. And, like, they even show, like, I guess the hand of Cable in the real quickly. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it just to see this cast of characters.
Yeah, I'm on the same boat as you guys. I think it's a really good tease. I'm looking forward to how they're going to, like, advance the story, because I thought, like, the first film had very little story, but it's still an entertaining film. But I thought it was, like, I wondered what they would, like, do next. And doing the whole, like, you know, Cable and being, I forgot how that storyline is, but being inserting that character in this world, it will be interesting, especially playing by Josh Brolin, who I feel like fits the role. And I can't wait until, like, you know, he's in the film and whatnot. But yeah, a lot of those, like, surprises in that teaser. Like, I noticed, like, they are using they're still continuing using the yellow X-Men suits. And that's kind of cool. Yeah.
From what's her name?
I forgot her name.
Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Yes. And her look is really cool. Like, it's a little, they toned down the darkness, I guess you could say. And now she has hair. So that's kind of cool. Like you guys said, like, Ryan Reynolds is his role. Like, this is, like, what Hugh Jackman is to Wolverine is what Ryan Reynolds to Deadpool. So can't wait to see. I wonder what will be Ryan Reynolds, like, Logan will be in, like, 10 to 15 years. Will it be just, say, Wade, or I don't know.
I think it'll be an
old man Deadpool movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah, see?
Exact, like, same poster, maybe the same kid.
Yeah, yeah, same director. That would be kind of cool if James Goldman does that. But yeah, so looking forward to that. So speaking of, I was going to try to segue somehow, but Richard, you watched something on Netflix. What did you watch?
I did. I watched the new show, Mindhunter.
Serial killers.
New terminology.
I'm trying to warn you. Your attitude is going to bite you in the ass.
So young to be ruining people's lives.
What did you do?
You're developing a pattern of behavior that will not sustain you here. Agent Ford, if you leave, I can't help you.
There's no procedural rule book for how to talk to these people.
If any of this is going to work, we need to talk to more subjects.
More!
You want truffles?
You got to get in the dirt with the pigs.
How do we get ahead of crazy if we don't know how crazy thinks?
Which premiered on Netflix a couple weeks ago. And it's a new crime drama created by David Fincher. And he directs 4 out of the 10 episodes. And it's about the FBI's serial killer profiling unit. So it's basically how the term serial killer, like, was created in the FBI, because that wasn't a term before the late 70s when this takes place. And so it basically looks at the psychological motivations behind serial killers in America. And it's based on a true crime FBI book by John E. Douglas. So it's kind of it's a fictional interpretation of that, because his book isn't narrative. It's just a collection of the interview. So this kind of takes a fictionalized version of him and the people that he worked with to explore how, you know, the changing face of America kind of led to mental illness and how different individuals reacted to that. Because before the FBI started investigating serial killers, there's this idea that the people who did these kind of mass killings, and they were just called mass murderers before serial killers, that they were born evil. But Douglas and the show proposes that there's something about America's changing that kind of proliferated this kind of behavior. And that's why we saw so many come about in the late 60s. And 70s. So if you like Zodiac, it's definitely along the same lines. It's like a 10-hour David Fincher movie.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much fans of... I don't think we ever discussed this on the podcast, right, John? We've discussed it, like, out of, like... Yeah, we're really huge fans of it. I think one of the things that was shocking is that seeing Sacramento in there, because of, what's his name? It was, like, the first killer, I think, the serial killer.
Not the first killer. It's, like, an ongoing investigation at one point about a person who was killing a serial's dog, I believe. And then it took place in Sacramento.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's rare to see, like, Sacramento as a thing. So I was like, oh, okay. I tried looking that up, if that's a real case. I am unable to find anything about a person like that. So it's just very interesting to see that.
But this actually led me into Googling Sacramento serial killers.
Yes.
And then it was shocking to find that during the 60s and 70s, Sacramento, California made up like almost 20% of the serial killers nationwide. I was
Wow.
So that's kind of shocking to me. And then when you read upon like the serial killers, it's like it's an old lady who's killing all the elderly people living with her because she's collecting the checks. And a man who thinks he's a vampire, you know, brutally killed all these women and, you know, drinks their blood. I'm like, oh, wow. but what your overall thoughts is, like, it's really good and you would recommend it, huh?
Oh, yeah, I definitely recommend it, especially if you're a big fan of David Fincher and what he does, because I think a lot of people, including myself, are really bummed that he hasn't had a new project this year. He doesn't have one announced for next year either, so this is kind of a nice way to tide people over until he announces his next project.
Yeah, I think him and television's doing well together. Like I think his first project was House of Cards, I think.
Yeah.
On Netflix. I think he's done another thing, but I don't remember
what was the other thing. Yeah, something works with HBO, but I'm not sure if it's still happening. It was I can't remember, but it involved like a group of individuals like finding this graphic novel, I think, that kind of had these secrets in it and led them on this kind of mystery. But that was at HBO, but I'm not sure if that's still happening or not.
Yeah, me too. That I think that's what I was thinking about too. I love how versatile he is when it comes to like choosing projects. He's not going to choose, like, he doesn't have like a pigeonholed like a sort of creativity. Like, he's always choosing some of the most, you know, not craziest, but like unique projects I think he's been doing. But yeah, so that is Mindhunter, that is available on Netflix. John, going totally opposite 360 on us,
not 360, instead 180. Of
examining or 180 examining serial killers, you are playing a man who's serial killing Goombas in the fantasy world. So what are your thoughts on that? What have you been doing, John?
I'm playing a game, a new one on the Nintendo Switch. I just recently purchased, and it's the continuing efforts of Mario trying to save a princess from an evil lizard named Bowser. I'm be playing Super Mario Odyssey. It's time to jump. So this is a new platform from Nintendo. I'm a huge fan of Nintendo and especially Mario games. I've been playing them for my whole life. I beaten most of them. Actually, I probably have beaten all of them. But this one takes a new approach to the style of gaming. Most of the time when you play even the N64, you go in the world and they tell you objective to do, and then you just do it, and then you get the star most of the time, and that's it. And then you continue that on and on and on. And this one, they take cues more from like GTA and stuff, and it's more open world, I would say. And when you do missions or little objectives here and there, they reward you with little moons. And another thing, the mechanical part of this, because Mario tends to have like a object with him in the newer games, mostly the 3D platform ones. Like what you call that? Oh God, I forgot the name now. The one with the little flood guy, on the island. Yeah, Sunshine. On Mars Sunshine, you have that little guy. He helps you with water and you need to clean up. In this one, you befriend a little cap named Cappy. He's basically his hat with eyeballs on it. He takes the form. So you're Cap in the beginning of the game. Little spoiler, I guess, if you care about Mario beginnings. Your Cap actually gets shredded and gets destroyed. And Cappy possesses your little cap and becomes your hat in the game. And with this power, you can possess anything that isn't wearing a hat. So throughout the worlds of different, there's like, I think, 18 kingdoms in this, or maybe less than that, probably 15. And each kingdom has certain type of enemies, but a lot of them wear caps, and that meaning you can't possess them. Also, they don't want to use the word possess. I think there's a term like capture. I think that's the thing. Because they don't believe that he's a ghost, but he kind of looks like a ghost when you see screenshots. But he has like a ghost body. The little cap guy, Cappy. But yeah, you basically take this mechanic and then you go into their bodies and use their abilities, different enemies. You can be the little bullet bill that flies around. You can become him, or the turtles, the Goombas, the little fishes that you've seen previous Mario games, and even things that you're not used to seeing, like you can actually become a dinosaur. They show this in the trailer. It's really quick. You become that guy, but it's like straight from Jurassic Park look like dinosaur or the T-Rex, like the way they render him and stuff like that. It looks kind of awesome. And yeah, it's just really fun. Very challenging platformer, challenging more than the previous games I played. The last one is Galaxy on the Wii that I played. Yeah, it's the same type of physics and whatnot, but using the cap, if you're really like expertise at it, using it, you can do a lot of great platforming to areas that you will never think you can go to. But with that cap, it just, you know, you can go there. At the moment, I'm only so in the game. I had to look this up just how big this game is. There's like 900 moons you have to collect. The moon powers this ship you have, and that's how you get to kingdom and whatnot. And you don't have to get all 900, but I'm trying to 100% this game. It's very difficult because the moons are in places that I've never really expected in a Mario game. They hide it from you really well. And you have to do like, they do these visual cues in each level that will help you guide you, but not really telling you where the star is. Like, you'll see a patch of grass, or not a patch of grass, like a whole bunch of grass, but there's a little patch of just dirt. And then when you go near it, you're wondering, like, what do you have to do here? But then your remote, you know, starts rumbling. Then you do, like, a little stomp, and there's a star or a moon hidden there and whatnot, and then you collect it. So a lot of the, like, moons are hidden throughout these kingdoms are like that. Like, they're really well placed, but they make you go to certain areas that you're not used to going, like in certain in levels, then you end up just finding a moon there and whatnot. So yeah, I'm really having fun with the game. It's just especially with the Switch, I can actually take this to my job and play it on break. I have two kids, so TV time was us trying to figure out how to play games and sharing the Switch and whatnot. And I'm happy to report that my oldest son, Lennox, he actually finished the game. It's his like first game that he finished by himself, and I'm just watching him play it. And it's just a thrill just to see him like, oh, this is kind of cool. He gets the story and whatnot. And yeah, he just really enjoyed it. So yeah, I really recommend it to anyone who likes platforming games, and especially Mario games. It's really fun, and just the world they create in Odyssey is just really fantastic.
Yeah, I've played I dabbled with it with you a couple hours. It's really fun, very unique, and it's kind of weird. Like the whole premise of the whole thing of the cat being a ghost or some sort of supernatural being is kind of weird.
In this game.
Huh?
In this game too, there's like in no other Mario games, they actually go to like a real world area, like almost like GTA-like. And it's just weird that Mario can like possess them too with the cap, and then you can become a human, like an actual like real human instead of like a cartoony human. Yeah, it's just an odd game.
And there's like that weird cut scene when you do possess a being.
Oh yeah,
it goes to like Stanley Kubrick, you know, 2001 Odyssey type of feeling where it is trippy and it seems very out of place, but at the same time you're like welcoming it because it's kind of refreshing to see Mario, you know, doing something, or the game doing something really different from its past games. Richard, are you a fan of Mario? And if so, what's, if you have a favorite game or anything?
I haven't played since like the old school, like classic Mario games where they still, the figures still looked really blocky. So I actually haven't played any of the modern Mario games because I've never had a Nintendo console for this generation. I had like a Mario game on the Game Boy Advance, but that was the last
Nintendo,
Nintendo product that I owned, so I'm pretty behind. But the ones that I played before are definitely a lot of fun.
Are you like a PC or a PS4 or
PS4 Xbox? And Xbox, yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I think for me myself, I own an Xbox, and then Xbox Ones. I don't think my brother and I have ever been like PlayStation owners. I know like our older brother had, and we played like the classic like Tomb Raider and Metal Gear, but other than that, I think we've most definitely been like Nintendo fans for the most part. But yeah, if you're a fan, or even if you are not a fan, like I think John is like saying, like, for all everyone, the listeners, like, this, I think this is a refreshing look to Mario's interpretation, I guess you could say,
of an open world, probably. Yeah,
yeah, open world. Yeah, so that is Mario, Super Mario Odyssey on the Nintendo Switch. It's only on the Switch, right? No other console. No, I mean, like, of course, but like no other Nintendo console, right?
No.
Okay, cool. So I watched something. Well, bring it back to Sacramento, I guess you could say. Kind of leaped through that. So I watched a film that came out a couple weeks ago. The film is titled Lady Bird.
So you're not interested in any Catholic colleges?
No way. I want schools like Yale, but not Yale because I probably couldn't get in.
You definitely couldn't get in.
Does mom hate me?
If you're tired, we can sit down.
I'm not tired.
You were dragging your feet.
You are so infuriated.
Please stop yelling.
I'm not yelling. Oh, it's perfect.
Do you love it?
You both have such strong personalities.
When is a normal time to have sex?
You're having sex?
I'm right here. Just wanted it to be special.
Why? You're gonna have so much unspecial sex in your life.
So this is the directorial debut of Greta Gerwig, who's been in such films as Frances Ha and Mistress America. I forgot what the film is called now. but she is a very talented, I think, a writer and actress. And she is from Sacramento, California. So she made this film, she directed and wrote this film, Lady Bird, which is starring Saoirse Ronan and Laura Metcalf and Tracy Letts. It's one of those like independent films from A24, that studio. So the film sets in Sacramento, California. It focuses on the character Christine Lady Bird McPherson as a senior in a Catholic school in Sacramento. It's basically like a coming of age film, and partially like a love letter to her mother and Sacramento. I think because of what the film is, it has like the same nuances in their characters as like a Woody Allen film. You know how like Woody Allen really loves New York, and he usually surrounds his characters in New York. So it has that same sort of vibe when you're watching it. So a lot of the characters have a lot of quirks. A lot of them are self-deprecating. There's a lot of like earnest moments that are earned in the film that I really appreciate. Especially if you're from Sacramento, like there's this, I guess, overly joy that when you're seeing these landmarks and the like the subtle beauty of Sacramento, it's pretty like, you know, cool to see. And like what it was really weird to see is, like, we watched it in this, you know, art house independent film theater called the Tower Theater. And then watching that, and then there's, like, this exit you take 16th Street from the freeway. And you literally see that in the film. And it's just really, like, weird to see. Because, you know, you usually don't see that in our city. And it's really lovely to see that. And kind of surreal, kind of. Saoirse Ronan is really delightful in the role. She brings, like, this sense of innocence and impulsiveness that is really admirable. Like, in, I feel like you can compare her characters to, like, the characters in Ghost World or Christina Ricci's Wednesday in The Addams Family. Like, it's really fun to see her in this role. I think the last role I've seen her in that is similar to this film, but it's a little bit different, a lot different, is Brooklyn. I don't know if you guys ever watched that film. Which was, like, a wonderful, delightful coming-of-age film. And it is more towards her culture. I think she's from Ireland or something. Which she's, like, an immigrant who migrates to, like, America and whatnot. So, yeah, I recommend Lady Bird, especially for those who are, like, supporting independent films and or, like, who just wants a really good coming-of-age film. And then... I can't definitely say that you will cry in the film, but there are some, like, heartful, tearful moments that I really appreciate. Yeah, like, I think if you're from Sacramento, you'll love this film just because of how much they show, you know, Sacramento and all. Like, Sacramento's usually is, like, the joke when it comes to, like, California that it's not, like, appreciated. Like, you have, because we have LA, we have San Diego, we have San Francisco. Yeah. And, you know, even Napa Valley, that's, like, only, like, an hour away from us. yeah, they get most of the attention. And although we're, like, the capital, we tend to, like, not, I mean, we have, like, you know, a basketball team, but that's it.
I remember going to Wisconsin and meeting people who are not familiar with Sacramento. I mean, California. I mean, I'm not really familiar with Wisconsin too. But, like, they don't know that Sacramento is the capital of California. And when we tell them that, it's, oh, yeah, and then where's that at? And then they always think it's San Francisco or L.A., one of those two is the capital. And I understand. Yeah, like, sometimes even on maps, you don't see them in as a little dot or something.
Yeah. I think Greta Gerwig had, like, if you ever watch Frances Ha, she references Sacramento. Like, there's a scene in Sacramento. I feel like... this Lady Bird is, like, a prequel to that character. Although it's all fictional, there's those, you know, like, whatever. She wrote both films, and you could tell, like, she's writing from experience. And the fact that there are similar characters in both films, but you could see one was, like, the teenage version. And then in Frances Ha, she's, like, the adult version of that character. So, yeah, highly recommend it. It's out on theaters, probably most likely in your independent film theater.
I want to mention, too, in Mario Odyssey, there's a kingdom that's called Sacramento.
What?
No. Oh. No, it's not. It's just everything that you guys talk about right now is all Sacramento. So I just want to interject Sacramento into Mario Odyssey.
Okay. I mean, you can always name it. Richard, have you ever heard this film? Or
I have, yeah. It's actually one of my most anticipated of the fall. It just came out here over the weekend, but I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I'm going to try to see it this coming week. But I love Greta Gerwig. I think she's a great voice, and everything she's done I've really liked, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah. Yeah, she's really great. What was weird, I remember, I think there was like a... Oh, I forgot this. Anyway, I was thinking about something, but never mind. It just escaped my head right now. We'll just move on. So speaking of Lady Bird, no, that makes no sense actually in this segue. So we're going to go to our main discussion. This week's main discussion is the film Justice League.
There's an attack coming. I need warriors.
Just like a bat. I dig it.
Let's do it.
On my lead.
Ride ain't over yet.
My man.
What are your superpowers again?
I'm rich.
So that is a clip from the trailer of Justice League. From IMDb, this is the plot synopsis. Fueled by his restored faith in humanity and inspired by Superman's selfless act, Bruce Wayne enlists the help of his newfound ally, Diana Prince, and to face an even greater enemy. This film is directed by Zack Snyder, starring Ben Affleck, Henry Cavill, Gal Gadot, Ezra Miller, Jason Momoa, and Ray Fisher. So I think we're all pretty much fans of, like, at least some sort of familiarity with, like, Justice League, whether it's from the television cartoon show or comic books or even individual, you know, like, we're fans of Batman or Wonder Woman. So I'll start with you, Richard. I think when it comes to comic books, and I feel like because I follow you on Twitter and I read your pieces on, like, the audiences everywhere, I feel like you're the more, besides my brother too, like, more in tune with comic books. I don't know if it's DC, but what's your thoughts? Like, what is your relationship with the Justice League overall, and what's your thoughts about the film?
So I've always been a huge fan of Justice League. I've been reading comics since about age 7. Justice League has always been one of my favorites. And the show, the animated show that you mentioned earlier, I watched that every week that it came out, the new episodes. So I've been waiting for a Justice League movie for a really long time. So I was definitely really hyped for this movie. I really like Man of Steel and Batman v Superman. I think that Zack Snyder does really interesting things with the characters and really pushes them forward and challenges them in a way that a lot of the 80s graphic novels did, things like The Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen, where it deconstructs these tropes. And I think the previous two entries in Zack Snyder's DC film trilogy have done that. So yeah, Justice League, I liked it quite a bit. I definitely didn't like it as much as Man of Steel or Batman v Superman, which I know is kind of contradictory to a lot of the opinions out there, but I thought that the character work was really great. I loved seeing the whole cast together. I think there's great chemistry between all of those characters. I mean, Gal Gadot is just absolutely a star. I think she's DC's biggest asset right now, and the new players I thought were really great. Jason Momoa's Aquaman is a total badass, and Ezra Miller's Flash definitely stole a lot of the scenes, and I was really impressed with Ray Fisher's Cyborg. I think this is the first thing that big thing that Fisher has been in. I know he's done some stage acting, but I thought he gave a really tremendous performance there. So yeah, I think that the character interactions and the little I think the quieter moments were really what struck me most about the film, is all of these characters kind of dealing with their self-doubt and trying to find their place in the world. And I think it's always fun to see them team up and see the action as well too. And I thought that most of that was done well, but I think that the characters are really the standout. I think that some of the reshoots were definitely noticeable. That's kind of been the talk online for a lot of the years, that, you know, Joss Whedon came in and did some reshoots after Zack Snyder's daughter tragically died earlier this year. And so I definitely think that there's a bit of a disconnect between their two styles. I think that they are attempting different things. So I don't think that Justice League is as ambitious as Snyder's previous entries. And I think that Warner Bros. Is definitely trying to go for a lighter touch, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I thought that the movie was a lot of fun. It felt like a big summer blockbuster overall. Yep. But there were definitely some aspects that I missed that I thought that Snyder could have really hammered home. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot.
John, I know you're a fan of Superman. I don't know if you heard it's actually but your thoughts. You and I watched it together with our significant others. So did you come out thinking, because I know you like both Man of Steel and Dawn of Justice, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts of this film?
So going in, I am a fan of those films. I'm not like a huge I don't want to be like this debate of Marvel versus DC, but I tend to go towards Marvel, and just the way the mostly I like I might be one of the few people that I know that I actually enjoy like the comedy in Marvel things. So going to the film, I really enjoyed it. Just especially characters like the Flash in here just makes me really happy that he's in here. Especially the way what's his name played him, Ezra Miller.
Yeah, Ezra Miller. Yeah.
Yes, played him the way he plays the Flash. Really liked his character. Overall, I really enjoyed it as a film, as his team. So I've been like thinking about like this movie against like Avengers and whatnot, and I think this does a really great job as putting the team together, and they have this common theme in this movie that I really liked that I didn't really find in Avengers, like a theme besides, oh, we have to destroy this bad guy.
Loki.
No. Yeah, Loki. That's it. Like, but there's like this characteristic theme that they went for with Avengers that I really like, that all of them, like Bruce or Batman, Wonder Woman, Flash, and Aquaman and Cyborg, are like loners in this weird way on Earth, and they don't find, you know, a common thing. And it took are we going to talk about spoilers?
Sorry. We could do slight spoilers. We don't have to do like the big plot spoilers.
Well, there's a figure that everyone knows in this movie. I mean, it's Superman, basically.
Oh, well, okay. I don't know if that's a spoiler.
I really like that Superman, the person that found hope in this Earth, that found Lois Lane, found a mother, that these other characters have trouble like coping with, like friends and stuff, but they're very loner-ish, and it took Superman to make this team to finally like work together, and especially like moments towards the end that really made me like really happy and made me like hopeful for like this Earth and whatnot. I don't know. I found the movie very hopeful. And I mean, this weird way too, that even the very beginning scene, I really like how they did that. I mean, yes, people are like talking about the CGI of that scene, but I really like that scene of him.
You're talking about the reshoots of like Henry Cavill.
That scene thing. You don't normally see that like in Marvel films where they're interacting with civilians like that, like just regular people asking them questions and stuff. And the way Superman, this is like after, or not even, I don't even know when that scene is at, but it's basically someone's recording like a podcast, and they ask him like, why do you like Earth? And then they pause, and then you don't really understand, you don't see it. And then after watching the film, you actually like, oh, this is why he likes Earth. This, you know, all these people believe in it and stuff like that. And that's what I really like about the movie. Yeah, all the action scenes I really enjoyed. They felt different enough from other superhero movies. That's why I enjoyed it. They even play on like, we've seen like, especially the Flash, you've seen that type of power in movies, especially in the
Quicksilver.
I mean, two different movies that has one the same character portray that. But it's really cool to see his, and especially someone that can actually match that power, like Superman can, and just seeing the reaction to those and stuff like that. I don't know. There's a lot of moments in here that I really enjoy, just like little moments of like them even knowing that like Batman doesn't have powers, and you see him get hurt really bad, and he's trying his best. He's like the one of the few people that you like, oh, is he gonna die? Like, you know, everyone else might survive, have a better chance, but the whole time in the movie is like, I know, like, Ben Affleck doesn't want to like continue as Batman, so the whole time, like, man, this, he's really taking a beating, and it's just showing it in the movie and whatnot. Yeah, it's just, I don't know. There's like a lot of thoughts I have in the film, but they're mostly like little moments I don't want to like spoil. And yeah, I just, overall, I just came out of the movie very happy what I saw, and just having this team together, this thing that they've been building up to, even though it's not like as organic as Marvel, this still feels really nice just to see, like, even the beginning parts of like introducing each character, you get it right away. Like, this character is this person, that. And they, I felt like they did a good job at doing that. And yeah, I, at the end, I have the same feelings at the ending I had with It, that, the
film It.
Yeah, the film It, that I was just cheering the whole time. Like, the whole time, I'm like, this is that, there's a moment in It that everyone, when you, that you start like cheering for the character. And there's this moment too in this movie that I kind of hint to in the beginning of the episode, that I just, like, the whole time I was just smiling the whole time, especially this one character that I was smiling, that made me smile the most, because I never seen him smile in these films. And just like, oh, this is cool, this is why they're fighting and or fighting for and whatnot. Yeah, I just really really liked the film.
Yeah, I'm yeah, I echo the same sort of sentiments. I want to give a lot of like credit to Zack Snyder, especially that opening montage. It's like very classic Snyder. Like, you've seen it in his other films, but it really sets up like the story they're going to tell, and how are they going to resolve this without Superman. And I really, really love that. I think with Richard, I think because I read your piece before, or after I watched the film, and I think you hinted some aspects of like how, like you even said it here in the podcast, that the I guess the human side of things when it comes to Zack Snyder's storytelling, like that's what I miss about the film.
Yeah.
In Justice League, that, like, you don't see the other people who are participating in this, like the, like you see like folks like, you know, what's his name, Gordon and them, but you don't see the other folks. Like, I wish we had more time with the mother and more of the characters who are not superheroes in this film. But yeah, but I just understand like they're setting things up, and I understand that there's a lot of characters you still have to introduce in this film. There's literally three other characters you have to introduce. I think they did really great job in it. With introducing, like, you, I think because people are aware who are the Justice League members, that they kind of all know, like, Aquaman is the man in the ocean, and the Flash,
he talks
is
with
the
fish, no.
Yeah, who apparently talks to fish. And then I think doing that and then try to weave in a story that everyone could relate, and I think that's what I love about the film, is that there's this sort of, these are iconic characters, and they're maintaining their, still their drive and their personalities from the comic book. And then they kind of, like, Zack Snyder and the filmmaker still kind of subverts everything. And instead of making it too serious, they insert like humor, but also goodwill between these characters. Like, you don't, I think, I don't want to compare it to like Avengers or anything, but there's sort of this like tension between all the characters in like most Marvel films, which I understand that they need to build, but I feel like this team from the get-go were just hopeful. Like, they want, I mean, there's some sort of tension there, but they were all cheering for each other. Like, I don't think anyone was trying to like put down anyone. I mean, you have like the, you know, the Jace, the Aquaman like smart ass remarks, but everyone's really like really, really have like, you know, wants, you know, hope and warmth in this world. And I really like love that. Like, I really like, oh, this is really cool. Like, you know, they're going for something, and I'm on board with it and everything. I mean, was it like original, like when it comes to the villain? Like, I don't really know the villain that well. What's his name?
Same
Stephen
here.
Wolf. Yeah. So that came very like, you know, he's very generic to me. Even his plan was very generic, but if this is the way we had to put this team together, I'm all for it still. And I think they're just saving for the bigger, you know, the big bad. So, I'm really into it. We could talk about spoilers. Like, Richard, was there any moment in the film that you felt very, like, I guess, like, you were surprised about?
I thought that the way that Superman was brought back was pretty surprising. He came back pretty quick when they decided to bring him back. But yeah, I mean, I like how that was done, and I like how he joined the final battle. I think that the biggest thing that I had no idea was coming was in the flashback scene where Steppenwolf first comes to Earth and he's fighting the Atlanteans and the Amazons, and then this Green Lantern shows up, which is just, which is awesome. I love the Green Lantern, so that was just a really cool fan service Easter egg.
And then you see Steppenwolf look at the ring, he's like, what the hell is that? And then, like, where is it going, basically, to the ring after he kills one of the Lanterns? I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
That one does. I really loved it. You know, for a moment there, when Bruce Wayne's telling Alfred the contingency plan, I really thought they're going to say, like, oh, we found someone who's like a Green Lantern Corps that can help stop him. But then I was like, I like how they, you know, go back to Snyder's take and, like, you know, how, you know, Lois Lane is his, you know, key to becoming
I like himself that too. Again.
They kind of have.
I was
like
wondering that, too, like, what was it? I thought it would be like a weird kryptonite again, but I was like, no, he can't do that twice. So I was like, oh, it's Lois Lane. I really liked that moment,
which I thought was like a cool tie back to that that nightmare sequence in Batman v Superman. You know, where Batman's in that post-apocalyptic world. And, you know, Superman is enraged and he says, like, you took her from me. And the Flash comes and says that, you know, Lois is the key. So I feel like by deciding to confront Superman by a way of love and hope instead of violence, I feel like he prevented that future that he saw in BVS.
Oh, yeah. I did not notice that until now.
I didn't even realize that.
That's even a scene I remember, John, I was asking you, like, what's with the point of in Batman versus Superman when Flash comes in? And you were telling me, oh, it's Flashpoint. And I'm like, okay, but, like, they don't show it here in this film. Like, why did he go back still, too? But I feel like now it sets a sort of, catalysm to everything. So I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool.
He's playing the long game, Snyder.
Yeah. Which I think he's always have. I think he knows where the story is always going to.
Yeah.
So I was like, it's very unfortunate what had happened. And but I feel like you said, Richard, like, you could tell which is the reshoots and which ones weren't. And it's pretty jarring, but at the same time I feel like they tried their best to put the film together. I think in your, I don't know if it was like a tweet you sent or it's in your review, I forgot, but he said like some, like the CGI wasn't as good in towards the end, and I felt that too. Like their battle on that near that nuclear plant was like very like all green screen, and you could just tell. Yeah, I didn't notice like if with Superman's chin, if I didn't know about that, like I would still notice it.
Like, yeah, it has that uncanny valley, similar to like when Star Wars did, you know, with Leia and what's his name,
Tarkin.
The general, or
but with just the lower half of his face.
It was like the, because he has a mustache for the next Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah,
which was filming at the same time as the reshoots, and Paramount wouldn't let him shave the mustache off for the reshoots, so they had to like digitally remove like every single hair. And so it's just like you can just tell because like it just doesn't, that like top part of his mouth just doesn't move, you know, naturally because it's
it's
digital. So some people said that they didn't notice it, but I noticed it like from the first scene with the
podcast.
Yeah, the podcast scene.
Yeah. And it's only like probably like overall the footage is probably less than 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Like
yes,
wherever he's shown. Yeah. And it's just too, it's too jarring to for folks that could tell. Cause I'm taking like a digital effects class, and that's like one thing like we always talk about is removal or like of those type of sequences. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is super noticeable. I don't know, for like $1 million or $1 billion studio. That's kind of odd that it's too noticeable. but then again, I understand like it takes a lot of time to do that too. Like I think the time they had wasn't enough for them to really perfected it. Do you guys have any other thoughts about what did you guys? I think I'll ask you too, Richard. Like, what do you think they will go next with the next film? I know they hinted it towards the after credits, but
with Legion of Doom,
yeah. Like, do you think that plays into the next film, or do they think you think they'll have a Legion of Doom film then another Justice League film?
I think that they're gonna do because they've talked about doing a Deathstroke movie. And Deathstroke, you know, shows up. Slade Wilson shows up in that post-credit scene. So I think they're probably going to try to set up a few more villains, and I think that we'll get a Suicide Squad sequel before we get the next Justice League movie, so we can kind of get more villains in this world introduced to, and then I think that they'll come together in a Justice League sequel somewhere down the line.
Did you guys think that the boat was going to the Joker place for a moment?
I thought the Joker was going to be on the boat. Because
yes, same here.
Because the guy who turned around was laughing. The guy in prison.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I thought... Oh, yeah,
this is going to be kind of cool.
Yeah, I thought that was these two villains together. That, Luther and Joker were going to be on the boat together, and then Deathstroke meets
them. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That could have been a cool... I wonder what... I guess Jared Leto was busy with what was that film that he was just in recently?
Blade Runner.
He was in something. Yeah, Blade Runner. yeah. So yeah. I have no idea what we're. It was like I don't even know who would have been like the big. I think what's his name? Darkseid.
Yeah, Darkseid.
Yeah, Darkseid. Like I understand. Like I had to read up on like what's Steppenwolf's like relationship to this world, and I was like, oh, he's like the uncle or whatever or something like that. So, like, I understand, like, where that would go to. But, yeah, I can't wait until they introduce, Green Lantern to the team. Who would the other team teammates be in this world, in the Justice League? Would you guys want? John, I'll go. Oh, Richard,
I guess
go first.
Green Lantern is, like, the only one I can think of. Yeah.
I'd love to see like a Hawkgirl in there. I think she's cool.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then like John had to tell me cuz I don't watch Teen Titans and why Cyborg said Booyah and I was like, "Oh, okay." So that's
That a thing he says in the comics? I don't really read Cyborg.
No, he said that in the Teen Titans series. He's probably said it in a couple times in the comics since then, but that's where it comes from.
Okay. So it is the thing that cool. My kids watch. And then I was like, oh, this is... He says it.
Speaking of like Ray Cyborg and Ray Fisher, yeah, he was like really great in the film. Like, I one of the things I admire about the overall, like how every character had something to do. Like they weren't like sidelined and then like they're just fighting off the enemies. Like I imagine like how what's his name with the arrows in the Avengers,
Hawkeye.
Green Arrow.
Just trying to kill all the bad guys, but like every individual here had like something to do that had like who had was part of the plan, and I really admire that. Like no one's like just left out.
Yeah, I felt like that the film knew each of the character's strengths, but also like each of the actor's strengths as well. So like, you know, you have Wonder Woman facing off in the actual battle against Steppenwolf, which makes sense because she's the strongest. So it's not like, you know, you have Batman going head to head with, you know, this alien god with a giant axe. So like, I thought that, and you know, you had Cyborg, you know, hacking into the mother boxes and Flash going off to save people. He's not really, you know, engaging in combat that much. So I thought that it really used those characters' strengths well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He got to push people off ledges.
Yeah. yeah, and then everything else like comes together with the humor and goodwill.
Scene I really enjoyed in here that when we were watching the movie, I don't know if you remember, Ben, that my wife said like, he smiled when Batman saw Superman do his little line, and they cut to Batman. He has like a huge smile on his face. And
oh, I don't think I catch that at all.
Oh yeah, that's like that's the part I was talking about, like comparing to it. Like that's the scene that I was like, yep, I like this film. Just to see that one scene of him smiling that, oh, my friend is back. The one that I, you know, I thought he was mad at me, but he came back to help, basically. And, yeah, just it just made me really happy to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think I'm wondering if there is going to be like the ultimate, you know, director's cut, like how they did in their last couple of films. So
yeah, I can't wait for that.
Yeah, because there's literally stills and in the trailer that are footage that I've not seen. There's somewhere where Ray Fisher's character, what's his name? Not Cyborg, but like the human.
Yeah,
where Victor he's just Stone.
Yeah, like himself, like he's wearing his Letterman jacket, and I'm like, where's that scene?
Well, there it's in those like posts or the newspaper clippings. So they shot that scene probably and had the pictures and whatnot.
Yeah,
but yeah, there is probably a scene for that.
Yeah, so can't wait for that. So I think we've all generally liked or loved the film, and we're encourage folks to watch it. I know it's not doing great when it comes to the box office, but I think when it comes to like probably when it comes to like the DVD or Blu-ray or you know digital sales, it probably will get a little bit of boost there.
Yeah, people should show it some love because it's not getting too much love this weekend.
Yeah, yeah. And if you really love these characters, I feel like I think there is this sort of like I don't know if people didn't really like the last two installments of these superheroes, and I'm just wondering like if people are just also getting tired of superhero comic book films overall. Hopefully not, because I think they're really great to watch, and you know you always have variety. I mean, you also watch Lady Bird, just saying too. But yeah, so yeah, that is Justice League that is out this weekend, and yeah, we highly recommend it. So before we leave, Richard, where can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, so you can find my writing at audienceseverywhere.net, and you can find me on Twitter at Richard L. Newby.
Cool. And thank you once again for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Or this morning. John, how about you? Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at AbayaArts.
Cool. And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Benjamin Abaya. You can find all the episodes or past episodes and, you know, our countless guests we've always had that we love having on thefreakingawesome.com. You can find the podcast once again on any, I guess, podcast app. Mostly we use iTunes or Apple. So or Stitcher, I think we're on, right, John? I don't know.
I believe so.
Yeah. And then you can find us on Facebook at The Freaking Awesome. I think that's it. Yeah. So thank you once again, Richard. Thank you for everyone that's listening. I'm Benjamin Abaya.
I'm John Abaya.
And I'm Richard Newby.
And this has been The Freaking Awesome Podcast.